Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is producer Tom here. Deborah is in Australia at the moment, and so I'm just jumping in to give you a few quick announcements. First of all, if you are in Australia, Deborah's tour there continues. You can see The Guilty Feminist recorded live in Perth on Monday the 20th of May, Sydney on Thursday the 23rd of May, Melbourne on Saturday 25th of May, Brisbane Monday 27th of May, and we finish in Canberra on Tuesday 28th of May. If London is closer to home, we'll be recording Guilty Feminist episodes at our regular home of King's Place on the 12th of June and the 15th of July. And we also have a special episode of Global Pillage, the comedy panel show where two teams of comedians take on the hive mind of the audience. That's hosted by Abigailia Shimon, and it's on Monday the 17th of June. And finally, if you're going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe, The Guilty Feminist will be recording three live episodes at the Gilded Balloon at the Museum on August the 12th to the 14th at 7:40 p.m. For tickets and more information about all of these, go to guiltyfeminist.com. And now, on with the podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back to part two of The Guilty Feminist. So plug in and get ready for the fun. Hello, Adelaide. Are you ready for the second half of The Guilty Feminist? Then please welcome back to the stage Deborah Frances White and Geraldine Hickey.
I seem to have a microphone in both hands.
Oh, how come?
I don't really know how that's happened.
They call that double fisting in places.
Do they, Geraldine?
Yeah. It's normally, like when you've got two drinks.
Yeah.
Double fisting. Very handy if you want to, if you're not good with talking to people at parties.
How does that help you?
Well, if it's a good conversation, you've got two drinks. And if you want to get out of the conversation, if like you've got nothing left to say, you go, oh, sorry, I've got to go take this to my friend. And then you just go and drink in the corner.
That's good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just over there. I like saying, like, I'm just imagining the friend.
Oh, right, yeah.
You've been seduced by
I looked
by
up the person. There's someone up on the balcony. Like, oh, there it is, my friend. Hello. It is now.
I'm a feminist, but I once sustained a lie over a whole evening to a very close female friend of mine because we went to her wedding,
mm-hmm.
and my husband, Tom Selinsky, who produces this podcast, he can find... There's a fan of Tom's there. he can find long evenings where he doesn't really know people and the band's very loud, really challenging.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't mean challenging, I mean unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
And he just can't do it. And we hadn't been there long. We'd had like one drink and then this very loud band started up. And he didn't know anyone, and he just said, I just can't stay. And I went, well, you can't go, and it's her wedding, and we've only just got here. And he went, I can't stay. I said, well, I can't go. And he said, no, you definitely should stay, but I'm going. And I went, well, I can't say you've gone. I'm just going to have to pretend you're still here.
Oh.
So you need definitely not to say goodbye to the bride or groom. I said, just act as if you're going to the loo, and I will manufacture your presence here for the rest of the evening. So then every time the bride came over, she would say she loves him. She calls him Tom Lumbo.
Yep.
It's a joke about Columbo. Detective, if you're very young, TV detective. And she'd come over and say, where's Tom Lumbo? And I'd be like, oh, he's just over there. And then I'd just point to a man with the same colour hair who was in the corner.
Talking to somebody.
Yeah. And then she'd head over towards him, and then she'd get interrupted because she was the bride, which I knew that she would.
Amazing.
Someone would grab her and answer that. But a couple of times she said, where is he? And I just had to say, oh, he's gone outside for a breath of fresh air. She knows he doesn't smoke. And I kept him there for a full evening. So he didn't leave that party till 1 a.m.
He'd been
in bed since 9.
Doing big lines and big shits in the toilet. That's what I would have thought. One or the other.
You would have assumed Tom Selinsky was doing...
If someone said to me, where's so-and-so, and they said, oh, he's just in the toilet, and I hadn't seen them all night, and, yeah, big shits. Or big lines.
Well, one can lead to another, honestly. Yeah. I've heard.
Yeah.
Tom Selinsky is the least likely person to do a line of cocaine in my life. Of anyone I or you know.
Yeah, or maybe just, like, when I say big lines, I mean there's a big line to get to the toilet.
Oh.
To do big shit.
It's a cue. That's the...
I love talking about feminism.
Well, Geraldine, I have asked all of these people if they can give me some acts of feminism they've done. And I actually do want to hear from you guys if you've got anything you want us to help with. But we started off with gentle ones that we think, you know, people could, you know, wouldn't intimidate anyone, wouldn't put anyone off.
Oh, yeah, Dungeons and Dragons, playing with your kids.
Exactly, absolutely, that kind of thing. Have you got a small, medium or large act of feminism that you've done since I saw you last? I haven't seen you for 2.5 years.
Sure. I ran to the to a protest for reproductive rights.
You ran to the protest? I ran to a march?
Yeah.
Because that means when you get there, you're slowing down.
Yeah.
That feels like the wrong way round. You should march to a run.
No, it's great because you do your run and then it's a good cool down doing the march.
Why would you run to a march?
Well, it may have been because I was late because I was shopping.
Here we go. I'm a feminist, but I actually had a thing in London. I was meant to be speaking at an abortion rally in London and it was at the American Embassy, and it was incompetence. That's why I was late. It was incompetence. It was my inability to figure out how much time I need to get places.
Oh, yeah, I can relate.
Yeah, I was late because of excuses.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll just jump in a black cab. Now, the embarrassing thing is everyone else had marched from Trafalgar Square to the embassy.
Oh.
And I had to speak, but I only had to speak at the embassy part, and I was doing something else, so...
There's no excuse
for why I didn't march from Trafalgar Square to the embassy and arrived in a black cab. But I said to the driver, you've got to get me there. And black cab drivers, they really know the whole point is they've got the knowledge. And they're also allowed in lanes no one else is allowed in. And they know shortcuts. They're a genius. I mean, it's a dying art because of, you know, Ubers and stuff. And it's a shame because they're incredible. But I said to this guy, you've got to get me, I'm speaking at a march. And he went, oh, yeah, all right, love, what's the march about? And I was like, you know, look, it's about abortion, but you've just, whatever you need to do to get me there, whatever laws you need to break, it's important for feminism that you get me there. He was like, all right, love. And he loved that because he felt like James Bond. He was like, up one ways, you know, backing around the corner. Oh, he was loving it. It was a real, you know, like a high-speed car chase through London. And he got me to the American embassy. Honestly, as I stepped out of the car, they were announcing my name. I'm not making that up. It was so James Bond. I opened the door and I heard them say, and it was like someone looked over and went, "She's here," like that. Oh, it was like, thumbs up, thumbs up, Deborah Frances White. I stepped out of a cab and onto the stage. I couldn't really hide what I'd done, because normally I would like to mill in a bit and act like I'd marched. And I was like, oh no. I walked on stage. And as I got out of the cab, I said to him, "You're a feminist hero, sir. You're a feminist hero. I want you to tell everyone you're a feminist hero." He went, "Oh, I don't know about that. But I do think..." he said to me, "I mean, abortion, you know, I don't know, I don't know." He said, "Oh, look, all I think is ladies' choice." And I thought, you know, all right, if you add people of minorities' genders into that, it's not the worst.
Yeah. They can choose the next song on the jukebox and what they want to do with their bodies.
The next round is ladies' choice. We'll have some white wine spritzers. Ladies' choice. Yeah, we'll have a round of unfertilized ovaries over here, table six. Anyway, he picked me up another day.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw him again. There's certain ones that are around my area on the app that know me. I get in the car and they're like, you know, "Hi, Deborah." They're like, and they'll usually tell you, they're like, "Oh, last time I saw you, I was taking you to this or that. How did it go?" You know, because they usually ask what I'm doing. I say, "I'm going to a comedy gig, I'm going to do this, that." And I don't take that many cabs that all the taxi drivers in London know me.
No, I know what you mean.
But there's a few on the app who've...
And you're memorable.
Well, I'm in a cape usually.
Yeah.
One time, you know that feminist headdress I've got that's on the front of my book? Have you guys seen that? It's like a fascinator, and in feathers that spells out feminist. And I needed to go to a show where I was wearing it. And it's very difficult to transport because, you know, it's so easy for that to get crushed or done. I was getting on a train, so, you know, if you put it up. So I thought, I'm just going to have to wear it because that's the safest way to transport it.
So wrap it in some tissue paper or something.
I was running late, as always.
I
had to catch a train.
Yeah, put it on.
On the way, I had to vote because it was the general election.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, I'll bang it on. But I sort of forgot I had it on because it was just the way I was doing it.
Yeah.
So I ran in, I jump in the back of the cab. And as I get in, it sort of bounces on the roof. And I'm like, oh, you know. Anyway, I say, "Look, sir, you need to take me down to Liverpool Station. But could you just whiz around the corner at this? And I'm just going to jump out and vote. And you just wait there." And he went, all right. Anyway, then when I jumped out of the car, he just went, "Do you know you've got that on?" And I went, yeah. And as I walked in to the voting booth, like I walked into the sort of voting centre, it was like just our local community centre. Mm. As I walked in, the guy who's at the door, you know, there's a guy at the door giving you a leaflet on how to vote, whatever.
Had a vote card.
Yeah, a welcoming guy. He just looked at me and went, "Up the power." And I walked in, I thought, it's not really a very secret how I'm going to vote. I'm not voting Conservative wearing this. Oh, I'd be terrible in a police state. Now, I would not be able to keep a seat. I have too many ostentatious clothes. I'd be gone. Did you say what you'd done for feminism? Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
I ran to a march.
I ran to the march because I'd been shopping, and then I looked at how much time it was going to take me to get to the march if I caught public transport, and then I went, I'm going to run. And I ran the fastest that I've ever run.
Was it like, did you feel like you were a superhero for feminism?
I really did.
Did you run it like Superman? You know how he runs really fast?
Oh, yeah. I felt the feminist power within, for sure. And I kind of estimated how long it would take. And anyway, I ran 3.5K in under 25 minutes.
Wow.
Thanks. Some people can run 5K in that amount of time, but...
I went
for
to the
me.
Gym yesterday, and because I was really feeling like I hadn't moved much in a while, and I was just like, "You've just got to." I've been trying to do bits of, you know, stuff on as I'm traveling around.
Machines,
yeah. I do stuff on my, like, I have a Peloton app, so, you know, and I does dance cardio and yoga and stuff
fun.
Like that. So I've been doing that. But I thought, I know I really need to go and actually get my heart beating properly. And I was doing machines, and I can run for 1 minute and then I have to walk again. Like, and 1 minute and then I have to walk again.
Yeah, but so, that's how you start.
Yeah, but I was so fit during the lockdown because I was working out the whole time. And it's just a few months back to normal life.
See, lockdown for me, I went, I ate pasta and bread and not
just
much
fans
else.
Of pasta and fans of carbohydrates in?
Yeah, big, like lots of, like, we had, lots of, what did we have? Anyway, it doesn't matter. And then not much, just lots of comfort eating. And then I stacked it on and then I went... I wanted to lose weight, not for any cosmetic reasons or anything like that. It was just because sometimes I like to sleep on my back and and like put my hands there. But then I couldn't reach, so I stopped eating bread and pasta as much. And then my partner Kath was like, our work's doing a 10,000 step challenge. Do you want to join our team? And I'm like, yes, I love steps. Love them.
I hate that.
Yeah, and
so
I love
much.
A challenge. But I was like, but I'd be walking around just being like, oh my God, this takes forever.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be a quicker way of getting your steps in. And there is. And it's running. So I took up running.
They've invented a quicker way to get your steps in. Yeah. Do you think that's why running was invented?
Yeah, I reckon.
A quicker way to get your steps in.
Yeah, like they found out about that 10,000 step myth and they went, well, 10,000 steps, that's like 4 hours of walking. We could run that and do it in an hour and then pop yourself on the couch.
It would take me... I don't know. I just find my fitness waxes and wanes so quickly. And when I'm feeling fit, I'm like, I'm never not going to be fit again. I love moving. I'm all about exercise. I can't believe it. And then, you know, like something happens and something else happens. I get a cold, I get my period, and then I can't remember ever having exercised ever. And I just think, why would I ever move? I'm a sedentary creature, I think. And then I do one lot of exercise. I go, well, this is it. This is it's medicine. It's life. It's soul. I'll never not exercise again. And then two days later, I forget. I totally forget about it. And I'm like, no, I'm not me. I feel like I've genuinely, it's like... you know that man in Memento who tattooed things on his arm because he'd forget everything?
Yeah.
I need to have tattooed on my forehead, you like moving, but like back to front so when I look in the mirror I see it.
Oh, yeah.
If any tattoo artist seen who could do that discreetly and make it look, you know, chic.
You should just write it on your mirror.
Oh, that's good. That's better. That's actually, no, you're right there. This is why I invite you on the show, Geraldine,
Thank you.
I feel I get so much out of it.
Yeah.
We should get our guests on, I think.
Yes,
let's do it.
We should
get our guests on. Okay, all right. This is a serious and important part now. I have to shuffle papers, so just busk.
Mm-hmm.
That was not
what you wanted.
Busking.
Is anyone?
I don't mean like sing an Ed Sheeran song. I meant just like Phil, you know, say something funny or something.
Oh yeah.
Don't mean like get out a hat and a guitar.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, that's all I knew of busking.
Did you start singing the James Bond theme tune? Because that would be an unusual busk.
He died.
James Bond?
No, the guy that wrote the theme tune.
Oh, I thought you meant James Bond, because that's a bit of a spoiler.
Yeah.
For people who haven't seen the latest film. Yeah, the guy wrote the theme tune. Oh. He was in his 90s. He's had a good innings.
Yeah.
And he probably is quite rich.
How was that for filling in time? At a feminist podcast, we start talking about James Bond.
He's got more feminist over the ages. I mean, not more feminist, it's wrong. Less of a horrendous chauvinist. I quite like the Daniel Craig era because they said to him on Monica Bellucci was doing the Bond girling, and journalists kept saying to him, you know, Monica Bellucci's got you as a toy boy, and how do you feel about an older Bond girl? And he was like, she's age appropriate. We're the same age. And he kept saying to the press, No, we are the same age. She's like 18 months older than me. That's the same age.
Oh, yeah, but she's an older lady.
Yeah. I just love that. I love Andy Murray for that as well. Every time you see Andy Murray, because he hates the press, Andy Murray, and they'll go, you're the first person to, you know, get 3 Grand Slams and an Olympics the same year, and he'll just look at them and go, first man. They go, what? First man. Yes. Serena's done loads. And they'll go, ah! And then they always laugh, and he just stares them out. He doesn't give them anything. He doesn't give them a, like, you know, he just goes,
yeah,
it's appalling journalism. Yeah. Just love him so much. I don't know actually whether he'd like me even. I don't suspect he would have. I don't think he likes many people or things. But I love him, and I would say to him, Andy Murray, you don't have to love me. Yeah. I love you anyway.
Because it's lady's choice.
Yeah. Our guests today are I fucked up already. Okay, just busk. Don't busk. A guest today is a hard thing to say.
Yes.
Our guests in Adelaide, how about that?
Yes.
Our guests in Adelaide are Associate Professor Anna Ziyech, qualitative and quantitative social scientist with an overarching interest in health inequities. Anna's main focus is more recently the social determinants of refugee health and well-being, and also the links between discrimination and health. Please welcome Anna Ziyech. It's not even panto season and you're behind me. Our second guest works in the human services sector. Her educational background is in counselling, social sciences and international development. She is passionate about working with individuals, groups and communities to create social change. Her work mostly revolves around working with newly arrived communities, whether in research, group work or on an individual basis. Awit is also on the advisory board and group facilitator at WIT21 Hub, an international development organisation that is vigilant about child injustices. Please welcome Awit Kouach. It feels from those cheers like you've got friends in. Did you bring them in, or Adelaide's just one of the... Because I feel Adelaide's one of those towns where everyone knows everyone. Because I backstage, we were referring to Manal, and you said, oh, yeah, we know Manal. Like, you were just like... And I was like, that's right, I'd forgotten that Adelaide is like that. Because when I was here for the festival, I started to recognise strangers. Like, I'd be in a shop, and I'd be like, I was with her on the bus. And then I'd see her again... down in a dry cleaners, I'd be like, yep, I know. One of us seems like we're following the other, but we weren't. We were just in Adelaide. Awit?
Yes, I have a couple of people.
You have a couple of people in. Do you know they're in? Or if they've just... Just give us a cheer if you know Awit personally.
Okay, that was a lot of people. I only know 3.
Yeah, people...
No, I reckon those 3's made it sound like they're 50.
So, Anna and Awit, you are 2 fascinating women and fascinating feminists. Anna, first of all, could you tell us a little bit about your research, what it's about and what you found, just to give a broad overview?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. And thanks for the opportunity to be here. I'd also wanted to pay respects to Ghana elders past, present and emerging, and any other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here tonight. So, my research has been done a lot in collaboration with communities and NGOs in the migrant and refugee sector, and it's been looking at the factors that have an impact on health and wellbeing, particularly all the elements of resettlement when people arrive in Australia that are important for wellbeing and feeling part of society. One of the things we particularly wanted to talk about tonight was some work that I have been doing with some colleagues at Flinders University and Adelaide University, and Awit has kindly been a community advisor on it, looking at employment experiences for women from refugee backgrounds.
So why is it gendered when we're looking at refugees and employment opportunities?
I think, I mean, what we found in our research is that there's a range of barriers to finding employment in Australia, good employment that's good for well-being, and some of them relate to being a new arrival and coming from a refugee background. So they're things like maybe not, if you're not from an English-speaking country, the language barriers. It might be that your qualifications haven't been recognised. It might be visa restrictions, not knowing how the job system works here or knowing people who can help you. But there are also things that are about being a woman. And so, in particular, childcare is a big issue, and that can have an impact for people, not just here and now when they're looking for work that's within school hours if they have school children, or with younger children not being able to afford appropriate childcare, but it can also have an impact on when you first arrive. It's often an opportunity to learn a language and make those connections, but if you're focused at home on your family, then sometimes you can miss the chance to make some of those language leaps and some of the connections around employment. And some of the supports that happen in Australia happen largely in the first 5 years, so women can miss out on that opportunity to have the supports to connect them in. And some of the services may be not gender-informed, so there are different elements for women on top of coming from a refugee background. But there are many strengths that women from refugee backgrounds bring as well. There's a lot of skills and contributions that women are making to their families, to their communities. There's a really strong desire when it's appropriate in the rest of their lives to be involved in employment, and there's many skills and expertise to offer, but there are those barriers that have, in our research, led to lower rates of employment for women from refugee background, from women in the general population and also men from refugee backgrounds. So we're seeing those layers about coming from a refugee background if you're a woman.
Do you find this too in your work a bit?
I do. I think some of the points that Anna talked about is that, so within the first 5 years, they're just so preoccupied to settle their families and things like that. And so by the time they get to the five-year mark, they're like, they don't have services that are actually, supporting them, because they're not eligible for those services anymore. So then, it's like, where do they go? So there's all those barriers. So when a client walks in into one of our services, it's like you have to treat them like they've just arrived. And it's really, just simple things like, they'll come in and they're like, I'm looking for employment. I've been looking for employment for a very long time, but I don't have any. And then you ask them, do you have a resume? They're like, no, what's that? So it's just as simple as that. And then we start from there on and work with them. So.
You're doing some really great work, and it sounds like you're picking up some slack from where the government leaves off and where sometimes women get left out of that loop.
Yeah, so talk to us about, obviously we do have a new government. Has there been any changes in, policies and things like that that's good?
You definitely want it going in the right direction.
Yeah. Give us some good news.
I mean, it's fairly early days. We can go off what's been said will happen. So one of the key things for people from refugee backgrounds, there's a group in Australia who have been only allowed to be on temporary protection visas. And this has meant like many constraints on their lives, in terms of some of them expect you to live in a regional area for most of the visa that you're on. There are restraints on... constraints on family reunion, bringing people over, on being able to travel, eligibility for services. So a key thing that, those of us working in the refugee health and advocacy space has been concerned about the temporary visas, and the incoming government has said that they will abolish those and transition people to permanent visas.
So
we got to keep them to that. And they also talk of a bigger quota. So larger numbers of people coming in, because we've reduced that over the last number of years.
Why were we so hell-bent on getting people in regional areas, and what could we have done? What did regional areas need in order to make it work? Well, is it possible? Sorry, I'll let you speak, sorry.
No, I'd like to hear your answer. I think there's a range of reasons why regional areas were originally a focus, and that's a lot of that's around skills shortages. And so that
by regional, sorry, can I just interrupt? Do we mean rural?
Rural. Well, in Australia, yeah. We sort of say regional out of the city, and then rural is further out of the city.
Okay, so refugees often come to cities because there's more employment opportunities, but they would send people to the regions, which is not the bush, but it's like, describe what's... can you give me a reference point?
So, interestingly, in some of the bigger cities are considered regional for this purpose. If, like, Adelaide has been considered regional because we're...
How insulting.
Sorry,
how
Adelaide. It's not my decision.
Insulting. Outrageous.
Bendigo would be regional.
Okay, yeah, so yeah. Sydney is a city, but Albury, Wodonga would be regional.
Regional, yeah.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Okay,
that's where I'm from.
Is it?
Yeah.
That was a nice segue.
Yeah. Yeah. I just pulled that out of the air as somewhere I knew that sounded regional.
And you were correct.
Yeah. So you are from the regions.
Oh, yeah, I grew up in regional Australia.
Okay. But you've headed towards the city.
Yeah.
Because you've
a bit more comedy in the city than in regional Albury Wodonga.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, so... So when you say refugees have been sent to the regions, it means like they have to stay there.
It's not a policy that you're sent there. So the government here has said they would like 50% of refugees coming in to be settled in a regional area. You don't have to stay there. That's your original place of settlement. There's a range of benefits for some people who come from rural or regional backgrounds from their home country. It's a benefit to go to a smaller area. There can be other employment opportunities that wouldn't be in the city. Many people want to live in the city partly not just for employment but also for community connections. So that can be one of the challenges in regional areas. So sometimes there's efforts to bring in people from the similar community to build those connections. There's really positive examples in regional areas, really. I think regional areas are known for welcome and connection. There can be maybe less ethnic diversity in regional areas, so there's some work to be done there, but we've seen examples of regional towns really setting up connections to bring in communities and create a culture of welcome. So there's the potential benefit. The visa I was talking about is called a Safe Haven Enterprise Visa, and I think it was Clive Palmer who came up with the idea.
Clive Palmer's not popular, is it? I don't know anything about Clive Palmer. Oh, but I get the sense from this room he's not a feminist. The muttering that went on there.
Yeah, there's a bit to unpack.
Wherever he is, there's a chill running down his spine. He's gone, oh, what's happened? He's felt that. He's felt the vibrations of that.
Yeah.
What? So...
No, we don't have time to talk about Clive.
Can you give me Clive Palmer in 3 words?
I'm really sorry. I don't know who he is.
Good. What a gift.
A wit has been living in blissful ignorance.
Yeah. Okay.
He was a miner that went into politics.
A miner that went into politics.
Very right-wing.
Very right-wing. And how far right miner? Nigel Farage. Oh, my God. Okay. All right. Okay. So he made a policy.
He didn't make it himself. It was a suggestion. I can't remember the exact details of
he
it.
He popped a suggestion in the suggestion box.
The suggestion box. But it was about encouraging people into the regions to fill skills shortages, maybe not to find the right fit for where people might want to settle. But it wasn't... You don't have to stay there. Mm. You can leave, but that's the initial settlement process.
Right. And what... Can I ask, what are some positive things that facilitate women from refugee backgrounds accessing employment? Like, can you tell us... What's the ideal? If you were running things, if your suggestions were taken out of the suggestion box and immediately enacted, what would you suggest? What kind of things? What works?
Like what works for women?
Yeah.
Sorry, your question was really...
You got thrown.
Yeah, it just got thrown with Clive, and then I'm like, who's Clive? And then I'm thinking in my head, I'm sorry,
Clive is a distraction and then, diversion.
Yes.
And he has not helped us. We've been down a Clive cul-de-sac.
Yes.
Let's reverse out. I'm going to hand you the feminist magic wand. This is the feminist magic wand. Okay. So you've now got it. I grant you that. You can go like that. And so what are your wishes? What would happen if you were in charge?
If I was in charge, especially because a lot of my work is really working with, again, communities and individuals, but because I get to see like clients coming in and the struggles and the challenges they have, I would suggest that. I'm really a bit really thrown. Yes, please.
Now pick up the ball. This is feminism. This is the sisterhood in action.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, things that we've seen really work are that would work longer term support for people, flexible. So in terms of things like English language classes, etc., it's having them in flexible times for people. Actually, COVID allowed people to do some of those language classes online, so there was a benefit there. So it's about having the longer supports. It's about having a gender lens over how you do things. Like if you're going to provide English language classes, think about how to make them accessible for women. It's about, I mean, we had some really beautiful examples of employers who had a real commitment to women from refugee backgrounds, who wanted to facilitate connection and supporting them not just to get the job and give people a go, but within the job. So some of the women, one example was a disability provider, and she had a particular interest in supporting women from refugee backgrounds into employment. She worked with one of the agencies here to find people and bring them in. One of the things that some women from refugee backgrounds experience is racism and discrimination in society and also in their work. And one of the things that this employer did was to really open up opportunity to talk about that. So she had a weekly agenda item for the staff meeting to talk about racism. And so that was an opportunity for those women to talk about their experiences and to feel the support and connection. The notes would say that this client may be prejudiced, so that a woman would go in with an understanding that that might be the case. So just an example like that of an employer really understanding the context of a woman's life. So there's the big picture kind of government policy. So certainly things like, and this is not just gendered, this is the point I was making before about visas, it's about abolishing those temporary visas. It's about increasing the number of people here. It's about looking at qualification recognition. So another thing that we've found is that, you know, women coming in, so often we have found quite highly skilled women being funneled into quite low skilled work. And that's partly because employment services just need to tick that they've got someone a job.
Right. So even though they've got a high qualification or their medical qualification, it's just like, we'll get you into the bakery. Don't worry about transferring your medical degree. That's going to be too much. That's going to be too difficult.
Yeah.
And you need someone to help them transfer those qualifications.
Yeah.
I think, just to redeem myself.
I blame Clive.
All I know, I ain't going home thinking I did not say something, so...
You were doing amazing. We love you. We love you.
So just to add to what Anna was saying, a lot of the work, we try and have conversation in the work that I do with employers, and so we connect a lot with employers, and we tell them these are some of the clients, they're skilled this way, this is their skills that they have, and they're newly arrived, they're ready to work, and they're very keen. So we kind of give a rundown and have that relationship with different employers. And so to really just look beyond just the English language, a lot of our women that come in, they have limited English and stuff, but it doesn't mean they don't have great work ethics at all. And sadly, sometimes like that's what you see the moment you have even just a little bit of accent. Then apparently... you don't speak English and you don't know anything. And even being here in Australia nearly 20 years, I still get that. But just to be more, sensitive and to employ people from a refugee background.
That's a great point.
But I guess also having that support network continue on. I mean, obviously, if, you know, it'd be so beneficial to have, you know, someone like you be able to come in and just be there a lot longer, you know. Yeah. It's really, you know, the end of my bit.
Can I ask, is there any... Our audience love to help and love to get involved, and you've got a captive audience here of people in Adelaide. What can people do to help, to support, to get involved, to fund, to endorse, to share? What would you like this audience to do?
Do you want to start?
Sure, more questions. No, I'm really, really honoured to be here, to be honest. I think a lot of it is that if you can involve yourself in volunteering for local services, it would be fantastic. A lot of the time there is group, like, so for example, English classes, and they don't have a lot of volunteers. Like, involve... just being involved in that is sometimes enough. And tutoring, these newly arrived people, or your neighbour that's just, you know, newly arrived, say hello to them. These are some of the small things that help them. You know, you are linking them to different,
So people here could get involved in English-speaking classes or conversational classes?
Yeah, conversational classes.
How do they do that? Where do they go?
Well, there's many local services that I could name, such as Anglicare. There is, Circles of Friends. There's lots of, services that are out there that people can be involved
with. Google Circles of Friends, did you say?
Yeah, like different places like that.
Circle of Friends, the Welcoming Centre.
Yeah.
Circle of Friends, Welcoming Centre. That's a good one to start with, and then they can probably, you know, direct you to other ones.
Even places like ARA, Australian Refugee Association, all those places, they're ready.
Great.
Can I add some? So from the employment perspective, it's about where possible if you can support businesses run by people from refugee backgrounds. So in one of the studies that we did, there are a number of catering companies, someone who provides disposable plates, and a range of other, I think you were saying you knew some other, a range of other businesses. So
Is there a resource where even we could put in our podcast show notes of businesses from people with refugee backgrounds that people could support here?
Yes, we can. We can.
Great. Sure. And you were telling me backstage about caterers.
Yeah, so there's a couple of catering businesses that we
know. They're really good. And so how do people find out who... Because if they had an... There'll be people here who've got events. Dungeons & Dragons probably have events all the time. And they need those events catered. You cannot play... The hours they play, they need food delivered to the door. I've seen it on Stranger Things. They play round the clock, you know. So if Dungeons & Dragons need catering, do you have the name of a company that they could support?
We can definitely put some names in your show notes.
Yes. Put some names in the show notes and maybe also...
But tell me now, what is it? Because I'm thinking about
If you like flavour, go to Mama Rashida.
Mama Rashida.
Yeah, I love that place.
Is that in Adelaide? Mama Rashida.
Yeah, it's in Adelaide, up in the north. We use them a lot.
Is it a restaurant?
Yes.
Okay, so Mama Rashida... That's where we're going after the show, all of us. Going to Mama Rashida. So support Mama Rashida, and they also do catering, did you tell me?
Yeah, she does catering.
Okay, and then if you could give us some other ones to put in the show notes, that would be really helpful.
Can I still add a few more?
Yeah.
Wishes?
Sorry?
Can I add some more wishes?
Yeah. Oh, yes, please.
Which is just if you're an employer and you're looking for someone to employ, to think about how you might facilitate someone from a refugee background coming into that job, and once they're in the job, how you might support them once they're in there. One of the other things that people... And thinking about what local experience might mean, or experience and skills. A lot of people require local experience here, but there are many skills that people are bringing from their home countries and through their journey to Australia that will be really helpful for your business. And another thing
are
that people...
Are you allowed to advertise, though, and say we refugees wanted? Or, you know, how do you go about that?
You can connect into services that are particularly
designed
seeking to find work for people from refugee backgrounds. And also the other thing that people struggle with is not knowing how to find a job and not having the social connections. We know Adelaide, as you said, you know, we all know one another, and many of you would have got your latest job through someone that you knew. So it's about thinking how you can use your social networks to connect people in who may not have those.
That's such a big thing. If you can just get to know somebody, maybe at one of those conversation groups or through somebody or through like an Adelaide... Dungeons and Dragons. if you can get to know somebody who's arrived here as a refugee and introduce them to people, like... How do you know people? You have them over to a barbecue or something, and then they'll meet people. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I do that. Oh, you're an illustrator. I don't know. You know, and that's how we all get the stuff, that you're resourced. Mm. And so just bringing them into your social circle and treating them like they're a person can be the biggest thing you can do.
And Mama Rashida can do the catering at the barbecue.
That's a great idea.
Thank you.
Okay, that's phenomenal.
And advocacy. Advocating around some of the things that we've talked about, visas and quotas, and I saw Amnesty was here today, so that's looking at the refugee sort of experience at the source as well. So that's another thing.
Amnesty International are in the building tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm an Amnesty ambassador, so get involved in Adelaide Amnesty, because they've always... If you're thinking, oh, I'm frustrated, I don't know what to do, or, you know, I wish I could do more, they will direct you to what you can do all the time. So they make it really, really easy, and you just, without having to come up with all of this yourself, you're plugged into an organisation that's already constantly doing something for human rights. They can say, this person over here, this person, can you write a letter about this? Can you get someone else involved in this? Can you volunteer here? You share this. And whatever level you're at, whether that's you've got time to share something online or whether you've got time to actually get more involved, they'll give you something to do. Now, before we finish up, is there anything you came to say that you didn't get to say?
I think I've hogged the mic. Whit, did you have anything?
No, I already redeemed myself.
Yes. No redemption necessary. You're doing incredible work. And we absolutely love you, and we really appreciate you coming on The Guilty Feminist. I did say to this audience before, if anyone has anything local that you need people to get involved with, just shout out now. If you does anyone need help or funding for anything?
The Working Women's Centre.
The Working Women's Centre. Okay. Just quickly, where are you? Can you quickly run forward and take the mic? And you've got like a 60-second elevator pitch.
Hello.
The Working Women's Centre is a community legal centre that helps women with work-related issues, so things like wage theft, discrimination, sexual harassment, all of those things. If you want to like us on Facebook, sign up to our mailing list. Donate to us if you've got money. You can fundraise us. Recently, in the last financial year, we recovered over $1 million in stolen wages, compensation, lost income. And it's a very small team of about 5 lawyers, or legal eagles, as I like to think of them. They're amazing. Also, if you have a stable job and stable income, you should join your union as well.
What's your name?
My name's Shay.
Shay, and this is the Working Women's Centre.
Working Women's Centre SA.
SA, South Australia. Do you have... will you accept direct debits?
Sure.
Okay. So do you have a system for that? Can people go there today on the website?
Yeah, so if you go to the Working Women's Centre's website, that's wwcsa.org.au, or just Google Working Women's Centre, you'll find us. Click on the donate button.
Great. And if you could give like £1 a month or two, a dollar a month, sorry. Got where I was. $2 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever it is that you think you can give, you know that's going somewhere really good. That's your money at work for feminism. And if you sometimes think, oh my God, I'm so busy in my job, just knowing that, and then you're invested and you get all of the details from them and you can see what they're doing. And then when you do have a bit more time or energy, you can then get involved. But what I would say is, the request I'd make is everyone should retweet it at the same time, but everyone over the next 24 hours, retweet, share on Facebook, whatever. But could I ask you, this is a better strategy, and I've just learned this recently. Look through your WhatsApp groups, who are the rich people, and directly write to somebody and go, hey, I think you'd really like this. Like, rich women... Say, hey, the Working Women's Centre really needs investment by someone like you, and I was thinking about you, and I heard about this at the Guilty Feminist, and I really thought of you, and I think you'd be an amazing patron or, you know, amazing sponsor. And if you directly ask someone, rather than them seeing it as wallpaper, very few rich people go, no. They go, oh, you've thought of me as a philanthropist, and I've thought of you. And if you say, I've thought of you because I know how much you care, and I know also that you love, you know, in you how, you know, I see you as a feminist in my life. And da, da, da. I've tried this on LGBTQ issues with rich gay men. It really works. Really works. So that's what I would ask you to do. The richest person in your life, you go to them and you ask them, what could
I
you
feel
give?
This has been done to me.
Not by me.
Not by you. But
do you?
In a WhatsApp group.
They've asked you.
And I did.
Yeah, see? It works. The anyway, system works. Well, listen, thank you so much. You have been an incredible advocate, and I just love the way you've just jumped up and just done the most incredible pitch. Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much. Now, we have to finish the show. You're double fisting. We have to finish the show, and so to do that, we're all going to stay up. And if she is still awake, because she's quite jet lagged, she's only been here for 2 days, so she's been going to bed at 7 o'clock. If she's still awake, please welcome to the stage the incredible Grace Petrie.
Still here. Oh, what a night. Thanks so much. Are you enjoying yourselves, Adelaide? Basically, a few years ago, I was... So what happened is I got dumped, right? I got dumped. A bigger laugh from the back of the auditorium for that. Thanks very much. No, I suppose I did deserve it. I got dumped. I've just been dating someone, like, not for very long, and it just didn't work out, And, you know, I just sort of never really found out why, you know? And I was, around about the time I sort of, like, you know when you're just thinking about it all the time, and I was sort of talking to my friends about it all the time, and I was like, you know, trying to analyze it with my friends all the time. And then I sort of realized that my friends were getting pretty fucking sick of this, to be honest. They were like, yeah, do you know what, just sort of move on. I've got two little nieces, and around about this time in my life, they were watching a lot of Frozen. You know the Disney film Frozen? And a rather frosty reception for Frozen. Has it got beef with Adelaide that I don't know about? But at this time in my life, I found the film very helpful. Give me a shout if you've seen Frozen. Okay. Well then, this is for all of you guys who've ever been ghosted or watched Frozen. Or that Venn diagram in the middle, which comprises me. It's called Princess Elsa Blues. And after this, you're going to be released for an interval. So well, I'll leave you on this one, I guess. Well, last night in the pub, I realised I was being tolerated, not enjoyed. I saw it there reflected in friends' eyes, that I'd become the kind of person I avoid. Well, I woke up feeling rough and wondering when my needle got stuck on a groove called you. And as I reached for Alka-Seltzer, the wisdom of Elsa came to me, and now I know what I must do. Because living without you, I've gotten pretty good. Just need to stop talking about you like my friends all wish I would. And I don't understand what happened, but I guess I'll never know. I don't need to go to a palace made of snow. I just need to let it go. Epiphanies can come from anywhere, from the sunrise or the verses of Shakespeare. But it wasn't Sylvia Plath or Nietzsche that turned out to be my teacher. It was Disney had the words I had to hear. Because living without you, I've gotten pretty good. Just need to stop talking about you like my friends all wish I would. And I don't understand what happened, but I guess I'll never know. I don't need to go to a palace made of snow. I just need to let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away and slam the door. And all those times I just wouldn't be told. Well, now I've finally broke out this chokehold. And all the times you were cold never bothered me anyway. Because living without you, I've gotten pretty good. Just need to stop talking about you like my friends all wish I would. And I don't understand what happened, but I guess I'll never know. I don't need to go to a palace made of snow. I just need to let it go. I just need to let it go. I just need to let it go.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Geraldine Hickey, with my very special guests Professor Anne Ziesch, Awit Kuak, and Manal Yunus, with music from Grace Petrie. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge and produced by Nick Sheldon. The producer for The Spontaneity Shop was Tom Selinski. Thanks to Bone Presents, UTA, and all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
To create social change. Her work mostly revolves around working with newly arrived communities, whether in research, group work, or whether in research. This is for the podcast. If I do it again, normally I would just drive through. But for the listeners at home, I've got to make it perfect. You have to accept anything. I'm so sorry, that's your punishment for coming out. You get to see all the bloopers in real time. She is passionate about working with individuals, groups, and communities to create social change.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.